This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Bama Online Podcast. This one's set for a Friday afternoon, May the 27th, 2022. Travis Ryer, senior analyst for BamaOnline.com, joined by senior team reporter Charlie Potter. And Charlie, we were talking about this a little bit before I hit the old record button, but and we certainly hope we don't undervalue or discount how much folks out there love Fridays, but for what we do in our business, Fridays really don't hit all that different, do they?
No, it's like the eve of a busy weekend. Fridays, honestly,
it's like Sunday. Yeah.
Fridays, honestly, during the season especially, and that's kind of where my mind goes to when you talk about work, because that's kind of the regimented, you know what you're going to get each and every week, and that's what you're building up to. But Fridays are the easy day. That's kind of the day off. You're either traveling or you know, just kind of recapping the week, getting ready for the weekend, and there's nothing really going on from a news standpoint. So, yeah, you know, just talking about like a holiday weekend like this, and this time of year you get to enjoy it. But, you know, Fridays, long weekends, Mondays off of work, you know, those are kind of, you know, foreign subjects for us. And you're not complaining or anything because you get to go to these, you know, big games, and a lot of the time you're driving or you'll get on a plane to go to a different state to watch a football game. But it does, you know, people live for Fridays, but they live for Friday because they know they're going to get to go tailgate and watch a game with their buddies and drink beer and all that. And that's not the case for us.
Yeah. And back in the old days, Friday signified a payday,
right,
almost weekly, you know, like for my folks, I'm sure your folks, it was the same way. And even for myself, many, many years ago, man, Friday, every other Friday, you're looking for that, not only a paycheck to drop into the account, but actual paychecks that you would receive and rush to the bank to get them in there because maybe you had a few things float, you know, that you were trying to make work there. You had a few balls in the air that you were juggling financially. But yeah, it should be a big, big holiday weekend, certainly Memorial Day weekend, a very special one as we continue to pay tribute and remember those who have served our country and made the ultimate sacrifice in many, many cases. So we don't want to overlook that situation as well. But certainly on the sports front, a lot going on. It's already been a big week at BamaOnline.com. We had the commitment of four-star 2023 quarterback Eli Holstein earlier in the week. We had complete coverage of that, ongoing coverage of Holstein's decision right there at BamaOnline.com, including a breaking podcast right here on the Bama Online podcast with site publisher Tim Watts. Hank South has been tremendous, as usual, on the recruiting front for us. And over the days that have followed, all of this stuff you've been able to catch up with right there with us at BamaOnline.com. Charlie, I mean, from a baseball perspective, is this team going to mess around and make an NCAA regional?
It kind of looks that way. They've been playing really well. They've been getting really good effort from their bullpen. You know, it's not going to be easy. It never is in the SEC. You know, they beat an Arkansas team now that they beat three games in a row. They were, I think, ranked 10th in the country, depending on, you know, what publication you look at, of course. It feels like for baseball, there's a million of those. And now they're going to be facing A&M, which is ranked number three. And they're going to be doing that later today. Well, fingers crossed later today. This schedule's been all kinds of messed up in Hoover because of the weather, but I think the rain has finally left and hopefully they can get a bunch of baseball in. I know last night that Kentucky and LSU game was still going on at well past midnight, if not 1 a.m. So it is has been an exciting week in Hoover for Alabama. I know these guys they went into it knowing, you know, what had to be done. They couldn't just be one and done or their season would be officially over. They had to win a couple games, and they've done that. And I think a third would make them feel very comfortable. Two might do it. You never know. I think playing in the country's toughest conference certainly helps. But you know, getting another win with two chances to do so, I think would be would lock them in for postseason bid. But we'll see. They've been playing well. We'll see if they can keep it up.
You said it. Another top 10 opponent on the horizon coming up, scheduled anyway, for a later on Friday in rain-soaked Hoover. As the Texas A&M Aggies, who dimed Florida Thursday night by a score of 10-0, await Alabama. Took 2 of 3 from the Aggies in Tuscaloosa way back in early April. Alabama now at 31-27 overall, and an RPI in the low 40s. So, as you outlined, one more win would seemingly have Alabama in very good shape where NCAA tournament play is concerned. And seeing as how Alabama's still in that winner's bracket, a couple opportunities to get it, because even with a loss, they would still be alive with an opportunity to accumulate more wins before the completion of the 2022 SEC baseball tournament. Charlie, on the Alabama men's basketball front, continued recruiting going on there where the transfer portal is concerned. And looks like Nate Oates picked up a 6'5 guard who, based on what we had heard from Nate Oates in the last couple of weeks, seems like Dominic Welch, previously of St. Bonaventure, checks a lot of the boxes that Nate outlined for us.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. You know, hearing from him at the Regions Pro-Am, you know, he talked about wanting to fill the two spots, and I asked him, what he's looking for positionally. And he really didn't specify from a position standpoint, but they're looking for shooting. They're looking for wing-type players that can shoot the ball. And, you know, just looking at the way that Nate talked about Dominic in the release Alabama put out when they made his signing official, he talked about him being a versatile wing who has experience and can really score the ball, and he's one of the top shooters in the Atlantic 10. So that guy checks all the boxes. And I think that's really what they're looking for, is just, you know, experienced guys that are willing to come in and compete, first of all, but can shoot and score the basketball. Guys that, you know, are high character players that can, you know, come in and help kind of reestablish that culture. And, you know, doing that with, you know, Dominic Welch and Mark Sears, those are two, you know, quality transfer portal pickups for Natives and company. And that brings the team up to 12 scholarship players. Of course, they'll be at 11 healthy guys with Javon Quinterly still, you know, rehabbing that injury. So there's one spot left. And I think, again, it's the outline's clear of what they want, and we'll see if they can go out and get somebody. You know, there's some big names out there, and I don't know if a lot of those are going to be what Alabama's going after, because the minutes are going to be sparse. You know, we talked about it before. And this is a good roster, and one that, you know, you're going to have to fight for time on the floor. And so I think they're looking for guys that are willing to do that, but guys that can, you know, bring a quality and an aspect to the team from a shooting standpoint that can really help them, you know, this season.
Yeah, we had heard Nate previously allude to at least his perspective of some potential transfer options, maybe being a little bit leery of that Alabama roster already that was in place in terms of potential minutes and, you know, being able to get enough shots and enough floor time with what he has already assembled along with his staff for the 2022-2023 season. So doesn't appear as if Dominic Welch is afraid of the smoke, so to speak. And he is a guy, you said it, you mentioned shooting multiple times and outlining Welch and his decision to join Alabama. He is a guy that averaged double figures in each of his final three seasons with the Bonnies. And he shot the three at a clip of 36% or better in those campaigns. And you know what else I like about Dominic Welch? And we've seen this, right, with Alabama guards, really 1 through 5. It's a collective effort in the rebounding aspect of the game. It's a guy who's averaged over 6 rebounds per game over the last 3 seasons as well. So versatility, yep. And a guy that looks like, whereas it starts with shooting, it seems like when we talk about guys at his position especially, he brings more than that to the table.
He does, yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, look at what Keon Ellis contributed last year. It seemed like you turned around and got like Keon or maybe even Shaq was Alabama's leading rebounder. So that is a good point. And, you know, you look at these guys, you try to, you know, figure out who Alabama is going to target and stuff like this. It helps when Dominic Welsh is originally from, you know, Buffalo, New York. I think, you know, Nate Oates and Brian Hodgson, hell, a lot of people on this staff are from Buffalo. So that's an immediate connection you can make. And that's important because, you know, when guys jump in the portal, you know, we've talked about it before, a lot of the times they have their minds made up or they're going to have to quickly do that. And to be able to, you know, have that, you know, kind of semblance and familiarity, I think helps. And yeah, I think, you know, from everything Alabama needs and looks for in a player, you know, to fit this Nate Oates system and do what some of these guys at his position, his size have done over the last 3 years, it seems like that's a no-brainer fit for Dominic Welsh at Alabama.
Let's get into some football talk. Is the Crimson Tide learned in the last few days game times for some of its non-con matchups, really all of its non-con matchups for the 2022 season? Headlining that stretch, obviously, the Texas Longhorns in Austin in week two, and it will, in fact, be an 11 a.m. kickoff from Austin, Texas on Fox Sports. Not surprised, because I know that's sort of Fox's college football money spot there in the 11 a.m. window, but, man, that's a tough one for fans. I hate it for the fans. I think it's awful for the fans. Not just because you're talking about Central Time and even Eastern Time, folks, but West Coast fans and, you know, 9 o'clock kickoff on the West Coast. It's pretty strange to me that you'd go with 11 a.m. But again, I understand for Fox, that's their spot. That's what they've kind of established themselves as, is more of that early window network. And hey, from a media perspective, right, Charlie, we love those 11 o'clock games.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I know it's going to be hot, but that gives you an opportunity to watch the game, to work, and to, you know, enjoy a new city. I've heard Austin's got some good things to offer. I'm going to, you know, hit up Hank and make him drag me around town to see what there is to do. So that is exciting. But no, I agree with you. I get what you're saying, because it's early. You know, people look forward to a late primetime game whenever you have two of the biggest names in the sport playing each other, and that's not happening. So it is. Is strange. You know, you hear fans from both sides and just fans from other teams kind of, you know, voice their displeasure on social media, on our message board, you know, wherever you see this stuff about this kickoff time. And, you know, you look at the ones they have outside of the season opener, you know, the Utah State game being at 6:30, a home opener, a season opener in Tuscaloosa at night. The rest of these games are early. You know, that UL Monroe game, week three, bring your sunscreen and hydrate, because that one's going to be hot at 3 p.m. Central. But, yeah, it's, you know, I agree with everything that you've said. It makes sense for Fox because that's their sweet spot. That's what that's where they want to be, and that's where they want to have their big games, even though we've seen some of them be at night. But from a fan perspective, especially if you're going to be in Austin and in the stadium, but if you're, you know, like you said, a fan from California, if you're a big Bryce Young fan out in California, you're gonna have to wake up early in the morning to watch that. And as a night owl myself, that's never fun. So a lot of things to complain about, but at least now we know we don't have to wait. It seemed inevitable. It was going to be that always, but now, you know, they've officially ripped the Band-Aid off, and now we know.
Yeah, and you can throw all the Fox ratings numbers at me for the 11 a.m. window and all that. Bottom line is, Fox is leaving ratings on the table by going at 11 a.m. You can't convince me otherwise. When you look at the schedule for that day in college football, Fox is absolutely leaving ratings on the table by not having that game in primetime. Put it this way, ABC had LSU Texas from Austin back in 2019. They didn't air that baby at 11 a.m. They aired it at like 6. They got it into primetime. And when you go check back on those ratings for that game, and I don't care, put it, if you want to leave ratings on the table, that's fine. I'll tell you something else. I think from a ticket secondary market perspective, I think if you're in need of tickets for that game, I think that's good news for you. I think 11 a.m. Maybe frees up some tickets, makes it a little easier to accumulate tickets. Acquire tickets at 11 a.m. than if that game was in primetime or even 2:30. So there is a bright side of that for some fans as well. put it this way, though, right, Charlie? We also learned in the last couple of days that CBS, in releasing some tidbits and nuggets as to its upcoming SEC schedule, October the 8th, Charlie, going to be CBS doubleheader. You think CBS is going to put Alabama, Texas A&M at 11 a.m., or I guess it's a 2:37 doubleheader on October the 8th. You think Alabama, Texas A&M will be prime time, Charlie?
No, I think those teams could go in with a combined zero wins, and that would still be the late game, just because that week's going to be miserable from a coverage standpoint because of the rehashing of what's happened.
Oh, God.
But yeah, when that came out, of course, there's no Alabama game on the schedule, but it's like, well, you can go ahead and pencil that one in. And you know, maybe if you don't have a pencil, it's okay to use pen for that one. That one feels like a slam dunk. It felt like whenever we knew that this Alabama-Texas game was going to be on Fox, we knew what the game time was going to be. And seeing that window for October 8th, yeah, it's going to be a no-brainer. That's going to be a night game, no doubt. And to your point, too, you know, you're talking about the ratings. People like to watch the late games, especially the big one. Your casual college football fan that just, you know, is going to tune in for the marquee matchups, they're probably not going to watch that game at 11. They're going
to
be
at 11. I've got to try to watch it. You're right. Yeah. I've got to make an effort to watch 11 a.m. football if I'm a casual fan. You're right.
They've got stuff they have planned on Saturdays. They have a honey-do list. They have lunch. There's a million things. I'm just thinking about the bye weekend. Like, I'll watch the big games at night, but there's stuff I want to get done on a Saturday. And people, you know, we led this podcast off talking about people looking forward to the weekend.
Got kids playing soccer.
You got stuff to do.
You got all kinds of stuff going on. Yeah.
So, yeah, I get that. I don't think that ratings was taken into account. They just – that's their window they want to have, and they have that monster matchup to
make a
precedent for that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're used to being the JV time slot. Well, good for you. Yeah, you finally – Fox, you finally had the varsity game, and you still played it at, like, 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon. That's what you did. You junior high this kickoff is what Fox has done.
Yeah, so I'll stop high, on it. They now. Junior high it.
Yeah. I went right on past JV, went to middle school, you know?
You're right. I mean, CBS is going to do the logical thing, and the matchup that people are talking about here in May, and you know, people are looking forward to Texas Alabama. There's some people that had that as the number one non-conference matchup going into the season before this, you know, Jimbo Fisher versus Nick Saban stuff happened. But, you know, CBS isn't going to be dumb and put that, even though 2:30 is a better window. That's, to me, the best window for college football. But, like, they have a primetime game. By God, we're going to put the primetime matchup in it. So, and there's a lot of good games that weekend. So, but it's still, you know, that one's the one that everybody's going to be talking about. That's the one that's going to be under the lights, no doubt.
All right, let's get into some summer enrollees. How easy they are to forget, Charlie, because we get so excited about the mid-year guys. You have some transfers that come in that mix, but really, almost half of Alabama's 2022 signing class is set to descend on Tuscaloosa in the coming days, and that's before you factor in a couple of additional transfers and Tyler Harrell from Louisville, the wide receiver, Tyler Steen, the offensive tackle, offensive lineman from Vanderbilt, and then a junior college addition as well at tight end and Miles Kittlesman. Charlie, I figure we'll just go positionally to kind of plug in these newcomers, these summer enrollees, and sort of consider what their arrivals could mean for those position groups, if that's okay with you. And I'll start at the offensive line room because we've already seen a transfer portal entrant from the 2022 class and Dane Shore. And it was already a pretty small class of offensive linemen, really just a couple of three guys. Elijah Pritchett coming in. You've outlined him. You profiled him for us there at BamaOnline.com. You've done a great job of getting our subscribers up to speed on some of these summer enrollees, Elijah Pritchett among them. And then, of course, he'll join Tyler Booker, who was on hand for spring practice at Alabama in March and April. So what we're looking at here is Elijah Pritchett. And I guess the first thing that comes to mind for me is they really need a true tackle type to plug into that room. And even if he isn't an immediate impact guy, a guy that they know for sure they can groom at the tackle spot for the next couple of 3 years, because really seems like they've got a lot of either or types between the guard and tackle positions.
Yeah, I mean, this is a small class. You talked about the top. I think it's quality over quantity with these two in Booker and Pritchett. But he is a guy that he is a true tackle. He might be a little raw, but he's coming in confident. You know, talking to him, and he said he's up to 325 pounds, which is encouraging. You know, he's listed at 6'6", so that's ideal size. That's what, you know, a guy like J.C. Latham came in as, and he looked ready. Whenever we were able to go out to practice and see the players for those three times before Alabama shut it down, you know, J.C. Latham, you know, looked the part. And he was able to get on the field a little bit as a true freshman. And I think, you know, the same might be true for Elijah Pritchett. You know, there's obviously competition at offensive tackle at both spots. But, you know, he said that he's been talking to Coach Eric Wolford, and he and the rest of the staff have told him that they need help at left tackle. So the sooner he gets on campus, the better. Because I think he's going to compete. I don't know, like you said, I don't know if he's going to win the job, but he certainly is going to have a chance to compete. You know, I think both spots are still pretty wide open. I think Tyler Steen is obviously going to be a factor there. And, you know, you might pencil him at left tackle. You like some of the things you saw from J.C. Latham at right tackle in the spring. And, you know, that kind of, to me, is what you predict at this point. But you never know what can happen because, you know, all the pieces aren't in place. Those guys haven't been on campus yet. They're getting there this weekend. They'll be there, you know, soon. But, you know, it's a situation where Elijah Pritchett is going to have a chance. And I think with Steen and Latham and, of course, Kendall Randolph, you have Tommy Brockermeyer. And then these two freshmen, Alabama has some quality options at tackle. A lot of it's unproven. Really, the only proven guy you've gotten is the guy coming in this summer in Tyler Steen that started, you know, 3 years at Vanderbilt. But, you know, I think with that versatility and a lot of guys, you know, playing a lot of reps at guard, you know, to have another true tackle come in and join the mix, I think is beneficial. And yeah, who knows? He might end up being a guy that earns some early playing time. I think he's certainly capable, but that just remains to be seen. He's, like I said at the top, he's not lacking confidence. He's coming in, you know, expecting to compete and to really push for a starting job. And if he can do that, that's nothing but good news for Alabama because, you know, they need that this season and beyond. And I think Elijah Pritchett's a guy that can certainly help this team one way or another.
Yeah, this was a guy when you watched him at the time of his signing with Alabama, looked at some of his high school tape, even before he was really a 300 pounder, he played with pretty good power. So at 320, as you reported in that neighborhood, you certainly expect that to be even more so the case. And I think the chance, like you, is there for him to be a top three type at the tackle position at some point during the 2022 season. Ideally, Tyler Steen plugs in, plays right tackle. You'd love to see J.C. Latham ready to take that next step and be the guy maybe on the right side if that's what it comes down to. But as you outlined, I don't think they're putting a ceiling. I don't think they're assuming anything with Elijah Pritchett coming in there. They're just going to see what he's capable of early. Sometimes with young guys, too, on the offensive line, left guard, left tackle, right tackle, left tackle, there's a comfortability that some guys might have with one side as compared to the other side. Some guys you can put on either side. It doesn't matter. So just some things to take into account here as we get going with Elijah Pritchett. Tyler Booker, certainly impressive in the spring. Guy who can play tackle as he did in the 8A game on the right side with the twos, or maybe more of a big picture future there inside at guard. Running back, we saw Jamarian Miller in the spring. We saw Jahmyr Gibbs, who we're going to get more in depth with coming up in just a little bit, the Georgia Tech transfer as well. But here comes Emmanuel Henderson from Geneva County down in South Alabama. Emmanuel Henderson enters the chat at running back, and you look at that room right now and consider a couple of guys coming back from knee injuries, the arrival of Gibbs, Miller in that mix, Trey Sanders still very much a part of things. Don't think there'll be a rush, I guess, put on Emmanuel Henderson, but again, another situation where you put a guy in there and see where he goes.
Yeah, he's also a really versatile guy. You know, Nick Saban, back in one of the signing days, was asked about Emmanuel, and he said he could play wide receiver, he could play running back. Yeah, I think he'll probably start out at running back. But you know, he has that flexibility to move all over the field, and that's good news for the offense. And you know, Alabama's running back room's in really good shape. You have Jahmyr Gibbs obviously coming in. He was the MVP of the 8A game. You have Trey Sanders coming back, and who played really well down the stretch and started to get more comfortable, you know, coming off of that injury, and did some good things in the spring. And then you have Jace McClellan and Roydell Williams coming off of those injuries, and Jace has been fully cleared. I think Roydell will be pretty soon, if not already. And then with Jamarian Miller getting that experience in the spring, you know, adding a five-star caliber player and Emmanuel Henderson, who can, you know, run the ball, catch the ball in the backfield, you know, bring a lot of different elements to the offense. That's a really good running back room. And, you know, I think both of these running backs can contribute. I think they can, of course, you know, make an impact on special teams in year one. But, you know, there's a lot of quality depth there, whether the guys returning, the guys coming in. You know, the young guys don't have a ton of college experience, but I think this staff is really high on both. And, Nick Saban has said multiple times that, you know, he's not worried about the running back room. He feels really good about that, the depth there. And I think Emmanuel Henderson only adds to that, and he adds a little bit of a wrinkle to this offense in terms of he can do a lot of things, wear many hats. And, you know, in this day and age of offense, of football, you know, having a guy like that, kind of a Swiss Army knife, is, you know, offenses will take them every day of the week and twice on Tuesday, and he's that. And it'd be interesting to see maybe where he starts out, you know, what the outlook is on him. I didn't talk to him going into enrolling to find out, but I think that he'll probably start out at running back, but that versatility, that flexibility is certainly beneficial for a young player going into their first year.
Yeah, it has a body type that you could project at a couple of different skill positions, no doubt about that, in Emmanuel Henderson. Now, wide receiver and tight end, you're talking about really about roughly half of the early the summer enrollees coming from those two spots. Isaiah Bond, Shaz Preston, Kobe Prentice, Tyler Harrell, the Louisville transfer at wide receiver, Amari Nyblack, Danny Lewis, Miles Kitzelman at the tight end position. So that's seven guys right there. When you look at wide receiver, you see a pretty good mix, I guess, of speed. Isaiah Bond documented to be quite rapid at the wide receiver position. Kobe Prentice very much the same way. Tyler Harrell, exactly what this offense wanted in an experienced game breaker type with over the top speed at the wide receiver position coming in from Louisville. Shaz Preston, you watch him as a high school player, he brings some physicality to the position as well. Not that he can't get over the top in his own right, but a guy that can go up and win 50-50 balls, win in traffic, pick up extra yards after the catch, after contact. So looks like a pretty good mix there at the wide receiver position, Charlie.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, speed is the obvious thing with Bond and Prentice and Harrell. I think all these guys that Alabama added, have some elite speed. Most of them have a track background. You know, I talked to Isaiah Bond, and that was a big thing for him, his track. He's not going to run at Alabama, which is a little disappointing, but I think that background helps. But, you know, Alabama at the wide receiver position, I know that's one of the top question marks for this team along with the offensive line. But bringing in these four guys this summer to join the guys they had in the spring, the talent is there. There's not a ton of experience, but the talent is there. And to add a guy like Tyler Harrell with Jermaine Burton as a transfer, you know, those guys kind of seem like plug and play. They can almost, they're not going to replicate or be John Metchie and Jameson Williams, but they both have some similar traits to what those guys brought to the table last year. And I think as guys that have experience at other schools can certainly help Alabama's offense. But I think these young guys are going to be really intriguing because, you know, when healthy, I think Ja'Cory Brooks is obviously going to be an impact player on this offense, if not a starter. I think I'd pencil him in there. You know, guys like Trayshawn Holden, JoJo Earl, Christian Leary, they've showed some good things in the spring and are going to be a factor. But they're going to have to keep these young guys at bay, and that includes the guys on campus this spring and Aaron Anderson and Kendrick Law. But Isaiah Bonds, he's fast, man. And, you know, we know Nick Saban likes speed of that position. You know, he said, you know, speed kills on the highway and it kills on the football field. And he likes to have, you know, speedy wide receivers. They've obviously had that the last few years with some of the guys they've, you know, sent to the NFL. But, you know, Bond, Prentice, Harrell, They all bring that to the table. I think Shaz Preston, like you said, he can do that. But you know, he's been working with Devontae Smith, and when you talk about toughness and physicality, that's Smitty. And I think he brings some of those elements to the table too. So it's a very inexperienced group overall, but the talent's there. I mean, I don't know if any of the guys that Alabama's recruited aren't top 100 players or weren't top 100 players coming in from a recruiting standpoint. So if these guys can come in, if they work, put their head down, and get these reps in with Bryce Young and the other quarterbacks, I think the receiver position could be in good hands. It might take a little bit, you know, to get that chemistry down, but the talent's there, and I think that could be a special group. It just, you know, it has to replace several first-round draft picks and live up to that. And I think with Burton and Harrell and these young guys coming in, Alabama's addressed that position, and they just need those guys to progress and develop the way they want.
Yeah, you got the quarterback, certainly, that can get the football to everyone involved in Bryce Young. Tight end, really wanted to add numbers there, obviously. Again, you speak about inexperience at wide receiver. That's a similar situation at tight end, although the wild card there continues to be Kendall Randolph and his availability and how he can help at tight end to go along with Cam Latu and Robbie Oots moving along. Did have a newcomer in spring practice at the position, but you're going to add three more in the coming days. And Amari Nyblak, Danny Lewis, a late signee or a late commitment in the process. And then you talk about later, Miles Kitzelman here in the last couple of weeks from Hutchinson Community College out in Kansas. So some fresh faces there at tight end. And when you look at, again, skill sets between Nyblak, Lewis, and Kitzelman, a little bit of everything, it appears.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, I think with – yeah, they lost a lot at the tight end position this offseason with Jaleel Billingsley and Major Tennyson and then Caden Clark moving on. We didn't see a lot of Tennyson or Clark this season, so maybe that's not as much as you know, some believe. But with just Latu and Oots coming back and then Elijah Brown being on campus in the spring, it was clearly the thinnest position group on the roster. And so, like you said, they had to address that, and they did. You know, a lot of it's young guys, but you got to do what you got to do. And I think, you know, Miles Kitzelman makes sense. You know, he's a willing blocker. We've talked about it before on the podcast. And I think, you know, he's a guy that can come in. And if as a junior college guy and a guy that's already played 1 year at the collegiate level, they can do some interesting things with him near the goal line with, you know, Cameron Latu. Those could be your two tight ends with Robbie Hughes as the fullback. You get all three of those guys on the field. And you had some beef from a blocking standpoint. That makes a lot of sense. You know, Danny Lewis is a guy I think can also, you know, be an inline blocker and help out in that aspect. But really, not even just at the tight end position, but maybe the most intriguing player coming in this summer to me is Nyblak, just because, you know, he's a guy that can be a mismatch problem. And Nick Saban, when talking about these tight ends, especially of late and how that position has evolved, you know, talks about that. And Alabama has had some really good tight ends, you know, O.J. Howard, Irv Smith. You know, a lot of people thought Jaleel Billingsley was going to be that, but, you know, he's now at Texas. To add a guy like that can be a big receiving threat and be a guy that you, you know, maybe line up in the slot or somewhere close and, you know, have a mismatch against a smaller defensive back can be a real issue for opposing defenses. So to add a guy like that, you know, that can be a receiving threat is big for this position group, because Cameron Latu did some good things last year. He had some drops, of course, but they need another kind of playmaker from that standpoint. I think Amari Nyblak can be that. So from a receiving standpoint, from a blocking standpoint, I think they, you know, tried to fill some needs there. And like you said, they're going to have four newcomers at the position to go with two guys that played some last year. And, you know, maybe the tight end position will be not considered the thinnest group on the roster. We'll see what these guys look like early in the season. I think several of these guys are in play for playing time, and, yeah, if they do the work in the summer, these young guys coming in, then they can certainly take advantage of that.
Heavy bunch when you consider the summer enrollees from an offensive and defensive perspective, with that leaning more to the offensive side of the ball, but certainly some intriguing summer enrollees on the way when we do look at the Alabama defense. Isaiah Hastings coming in at the defensive line position, Clearwater Academy International, specifically down in Florida, is where Isaiah comes from, although originally from Canada, I believe. So Isaiah Hastings jumps into that defensive line mix, looks to be more of that type of player that can play inside, maybe play some end and base, play some tackle there in the big nickel, and we'll see if he can add something from a pass rush perspective. But again, just looking at the numbers that Alabama has at the defensive line position right now, it looks like Hastings will be afforded the opportunity to progress at a reasonable rate.
Yeah, there's a lot of defensive linemen on this roster. And I think the three guys they signed are all quality players, whether it's Curtis Perry, Jaheim Otis, and Isaiah Hastings, who will be the third to join that group this weekend. But it is good for guys that, like Hastings, don't have a ton of experience. You know, Nick Saban, I believe it was in December. It might have been February, but I think it was December, the early signing date. You know, was asked about the defensive lineman, and he talked about Isaiah Hastings and talked about his upside and abilities. He's only played 1 year of American football, and that was this past year. So he's going into his second year. And so he's a guy that they've been impressed with his ability, his upside, you know, his potential. I think that's also, you know, when you're deep at a position and you're signing three players, you're afforded the opportunity to maybe look down the line, not necessarily a project player, but a guy that you think can turn into a special player. And I think that's what Alabama feels like it has on its hands with Isaiah Hastings. So, you know, you still have a year of DJ Dale and Byron Young and Justin Boydby. Those are going to be your seniors, your leaders on this team. You still have, you know, Tim Smith and now Jamil Burrows, who was really a standout in the spring, and some other young guys that are going to be given, you know, more of an opportunity. You know, you have the four guys that are on campus last year. You have Jamarian Latham still in the program, who's, you know, shown some flashes. So that gives some of these young guys an opportunity to maybe learn and develop a little bit and not be rushed into a role. It's not saying these guys won't get on the field by any means, but you're not having to, you know, rush them into that. And I think that'll certainly benefit a guy like Isaiah Hastings, who I think can be, you know, a key contributor for Alabama down the line.
Yeah, this isn't, or it shouldn't be 2019, right?
Right.
When all of these guys that you outline, a Boydby and Young and Dale, they were really pressed into some significant action as true freshmen. That shouldn't be the case for this Alabama defensive line in 2022. At the defensive back spots, a couple of safeties set to jump on board in Antonio Kite and Jake Pope. And then Earl Little Jr., who you've profiled for us in the last few weeks at BamaOnline.com. Charlie, this is a guy that, in terms of versatility, looks like he's going to be able to jump in and maybe at least push and provide some depth at a couple of spots that are of great importance.
Yeah, I think Earl Little's a name to watch. I don't know if he'll be able to lock down a spot this year, but, you know, he can play corner, he can play star. He did both of those at American Heritage, and, you know, he's, you know, following kind of the blueprint of a Patrick Surtain. Like, he wants to be that, and he looks ready. You know, he's posted some pictures of working with a Minka Fitzpatrick. And if you're wanting to get on the field early, that's the guy to talk to. And
especially as a summer enrollee, as Minka was able to do it himself. Yeah.
And I think as a guy that's open to playing in the slot and either that or on the boundary at corner, you know, Minka is obviously the blueprint for that. I don't know if he'll be able to supplant a guy like Brian Branch, who I think is going to have a big season for Alabama. And just looking down the road, though, Earl Little could be a big-time player for Alabama next year. Say, even if Alabama loses everybody it can lose this offseason to the draft, and that's Jordan Battle, DeMarco Hellams, Brian Branch at safety, and then Eli Ricks and Kyrie Jackson. If it loses those five guys, five potential starters in the secondary is still in pretty good shape for next year. I outlined this on the message board last night with people talking about Earl Little Jr. and their excitement for him to get on campus. And you could have Malachi Moore at safety with Christian Story. You could have Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold at corner, and you could play Earl Little at star. And that's a damn good secondary on paper, at least. You know, you got to see how some of these young guys continue to develop, but I think he has a real shot next year. This year, I certainly think he's going to push these guys, but Alabama has, you know, three guys competing at the corner spot at the top. The star and the money positions are kind of locked down by Brian Branch and Malachi Moore at this point. So it'll be tough, but I think if he gets on campus, you know, continues to work like he has, you know, Earl Little Jr. can be a special player. And if not this year, I think next year you really see him make a big impact. And you know, the same goes for those safeties. You know, it's a deep group with Battle and Helms at the top. You still have Branch and Moore. You have Christian Story and Devontae Smith. And so they'll round out an eight-player position group. That's why you saw a guy like Kane Williams moving on. So I don't think they'll be pressing the action this year, Antonio Kite and Jake Pope, that is. But all these guys are going to provide quality depth, probably play some special teams. And you know, next year they're going to be really awarded some opportunities with guys moving on to the draft.
Kane Williams and Stephon Wynn teaming up. Yeah. At Nebraska.
Jawan Gary, too.
Jawan Gary. Oh, man. It is
the Exodus.
It's just the Tuscaloosa West that's become out there in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hey, before we get out of here on this Friday edition of the Bama Online Podcast, wanted to throw an over-under scenario at you, Charlie. We like to do that this time of year. And what we're going to do today involves the transfer, Jahmyr Gibbs. Scrimmage yards for Jahmyr Gibbs in 2022. Didn't go all purpose because kickoff returns have become less of a factor, it seems, in recent years. Not that Gibbs won't impact that area, because we absolutely expect that to be the case. And he showed at at Georgia Tech that he's very capable of coming up with big plays in the return game. Still decided to focus on the offense, where we got more of a look at him in April's A-Day game. Had the 75-yard touchdown run there in the third quarter of that scrimmage. At Georgia Tech last year, Jahmyr Gibbs was sixth in the ACC in scrimmage yards at 101.3 yards per game. He averaged 6.8 yards per touch on 173 opportunities. 6.8 per touch is a big number from the running back position. He had about a 60-40 split between rushing and receiving yards. So that speaks to the versatility that we anticipate seeing from him at Alabama. And to put into perspective his numbers from last year, Brian Robinson for Alabama averaged 117 per game and 5.4 per touch. 82% of Brian's scrimmage yards came in the run game. And if you think back to Najee Harris in 2020, Najee with an astounding 145.5 scrimmage yards per game, 6.4 per touch for Najee in 2020. And what makes that even more impressive is he had 294 touches. So, you know, it wasn't like Najee was getting limited touches and just producing when he did get those opportunities. He did it with a pretty heavy workload in 2020. And that was after he went for 117.5 per game in 2019. So I guess some things to consider here, right? When you try to come up with a number, but I settled on 116.5 for Gibbs in 2022, because I kept going back to the 117 for B-Rob last season. And then Najee's 2019, when he was at right around 117 per game, scrimmage yards, again, rushing, receiving combined. And so I went 116.5 for Jahmyr Gibbs. And again, just a lot of things you have to consider. You got mouths to feed at not only running back, but the other skill positions in general that you know Bill O'Brien will look to keep fed, and the different ways that Gibbs and his skill set can be employed. And, you know, that's where usage, I guess, in his specific case, becomes a little bit more of a intriguing aspect to consider, because you know, we know he's going to have a statistical impact on the offense, but to what extent, there's some variables in play that will impact that.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that the rest of the backfield will ultimately be his decline in number, at least from this over-under standpoint. I do think Gibbs is the most talented receiver by far. That'll be a factor on this offense, even though I think Jace McClellan really showed that last year. And that was maybe something Alabama was missing, you know, late in the season, is that, you know, just option out of the backfield. Not that Brian Robinson can't do that, but Jace McClellan was especially effective in doing that. And I think Gibbs can certainly bring that to the table. And now a healthy Jace McClellan can too. I think, though, you know, Alabama probably go more toward or back toward a bi-committee approach with so many options. I think, you know, to me it makes sense with Gibbs and McClellan and Sanders. Roydell Williams, I think, can also be in the mix there. I just don't know if they'll use four running backs a lot. And so you look at that 2018 season with Damian Harris and Najee Harris and Josh Jacobs, and Najee being the receiving threat that he is, you know, Gibbs and Harris aren't the same player. Make no mistake about that. But Najee has really been a really good receiver for Alabama. He just didn't catch the ball a lot in that 2018 season and had, you know, 52.7 yards per touch in terms of yards for scrimmage. You look at a guy like Josh Jacobs, who had more of a receiving prowess that season and really came on strong at the end as the rusher, and he had 59.1 yards from scrimmage per game. So I think it'll be under. That's what I'm going with. But I think Gibbs will be used more as the number one back. I think he's going to be a real weapon out of the backfield. But, you know, getting up to that number of, what would you say, 116 and a half, that's
116 and a half.
Yeah, that's Najee Harris, Brian Robinson territory when they're the number one back and don't have a lot of competition. So I think with these other backs, that's where it's going to be a knock on him. I still think he's going to have a huge year. But, you know, I would maybe venture to guess his yards per game are similar to what he had last year just because of the number of touches he had. I don't think he's going to be able to get to that, you know, 200 or some of the things we've seen from these other Alabama backs that have been the focal point of the rushing attack.
Yeah, the committee approach that potentially could be in play, similar to those offenses that you mentioned, really with an emphasis on, say, 2018 before Najee became more the central figure out of the backfield in 19 and 20. I think where it gets a little tricky, too, with Gibbs is because of his explosiveness, right?
Yeah.
I don't think either one of us think that his workload is going to be like Brian's last season or even Najee's in 19 and 20. But where he's different than both those guys is that at any time, as we saw in the spring game, he can go, you know, he can flip the field. You know, he can score from anywhere on the field. So, yeah, I would lean towards under for that number as well right now at 116 and a half. But what makes me a little bit leery is that this guy could turn any touch, multiple touches a game, into big, big plays for touchdowns. So it'll be fun to watch, no doubt about it. And with that, we are just about done here on a Friday. It is officially the weekend, Charlie, as we put to wrap another edition of the Bama Online Podcast. Hey, keep it locked right there with us at BamaOnline.com, the roundtable premium message board of choice for Alabama fans everywhere. Even softball in the news these days, man. A roster transformation unlike any we've really seen in the Patrick Murphy era on the softball diamond. The Crimson Tide, unfortunately, not a part of super regional play. We're not used to that, right? We're not used to baseball playing and softball already being done for the year, but that's the case. We'll have all those things up to date for you right there at BamaOnline.com. Of course, recruiting never stops. Football with June coming up in a few days, that really gets us going once again on the football front. Basketball, we're always locked in on that as well. Charlie, have a great weekend, man.
All right, man. You too. It's always good to catch up.
Good catching up with Charlie Potter. Catch up with us at BamaOnline.com. If you haven't subscribed to the Bama Online Podcast, you can certainly do that as well. Anywhere you consume podcasts, we would love for you to do that. Leave us a rating and a review if you don't mind. That would help us out greatly as well. For Charlie Potter, Travis Ryer, hoping you have a safe and happy holiday weekend. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear.
We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.